The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson, and of course we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. Roy, I've always enjoyed when we've been able to have guests that we've had on previously that continue to bring out a message that is so important in a workplace like we have today.
Absolutely, and as you know from my healthcare background, I'm excited to see the focus on healthcare and the kind of nuance that Paul brings to the table. That I guess I'm revealing who we're having on the show already. I let the cat out of the bag.
Well, I'm glad you did, and I want people to realize that when we're talking about the quality of healthcare today, it certainly relates to every other business out there, and it's a situation, an opportunity for all of us, regardless of what industry we're in. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Very much so.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, our guest is Paul Spiegelman. He's the Chief Culture Officer of Stericycle, a NASDAQ-listed global services organization with 13,000 employees, and is the founder of Barrel Health and the Barrel Institute. He's also co-founded the Small Giants community, and it's an organization that brings together leaders who are focused on values-based business principles. As I mentioned, he's the former CEO of Barrel Health. Paul led a unique and people-centric culture there for a company that won 9 Best Place to Work awards, including the number 2 Best Medium-Sized Company to Work for in America. He was honored with the Ernst & Young 2010 Entrepreneur of the Year Award. He's a sought-after speaker and author on leadership, employee engagement, entrepreneurship, corporate culture, and customer relationships, and he makes frequent radio and TV appearances and writes columns on culture for Inc. Magazine and Dallas Business Journal. He's written several books, and today we've asked him to come on and talk to us about Patience Come Second. It's a New York Times bestseller, Patience Come Second, Leading Change by Changing the Way You Lead. Paul, as always, welcome to our show.
Good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
We're delighted and grateful that you would continue to share this message. And I loved the title, loved it the moment I saw it. Can you explain for us, what do you mean by patients come second? It almost seems a little bit scary if you're the patient.
Well, Max, not everybody loves the title. I've gotten in trouble for that a little bit, but I think that's the point when you come out with a book, is to try to get people's attention.
Yeah.
If you think about healthcare today, the common refrain we hear is, it's all about patient-centric care or patients first. And, of course, the industry is moving toward being more customer service-focused. That's great, so the focus is on the patient. And yet, what we say in the book is that if we're really going to cure the patient, if we're really going to make our customer feel better, we actually have to start with ourselves and build better teams and realize that the key to building a culture of a great patient experience is to build a culture of employee engagement, and that needs to come before the patient.
Man, this is a big, big comment. And I know a lot of people are saying, well, that's kind of, you know, sounds like you're just trying to sell books. And I know you're trying to do something to create this awareness, but it's bigger than that, isn't it? I mean, let's not just throw this concept too quickly and say, yeah, okay, moving on.
Yeah, that's right. The fact is, we're serious. We do believe that the patient or the customer in any business really does come second. And if you think about any business, you have choices to make about the leading or lagging indicators in business. And unfortunately, still in the business world today, financials are looked at as the leading indicator, and then decisions are made based upon financial results. And we think that's backwards. We think that you need to look at both the customer as well as the employee, but in the particular order, being employees are first, because if you build a culture of engagement, that's going to drive customer loyalty, or in this case, patient loyalty. Mm-hmm. We're talking about an industry in which actually nobody wants to be our customer. I'm not sure if you ever woke up one day and said, I'd love to go to the hospital today, right? So
yeah.
But we're quite serious about the order in which business is done.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because just what, like you said, the culture at a hospital has a huge impact on where you actually want to go to do an or have a procedure based on, you know, reputations. I mean, I know where I live, a lot of people say, avoid this hospital or only go to this hospital based on the culture at that hospital. And we also know that patient outcomes are better at a higher morale hospital. Is that the same that you found?
Well, that is absolutely true, but the fact is that most consumers are not asking those kinds of questions yet.
Mm.
And we are entering a phase where transparency in terms of outcomes at hospitals is at its highest level. And for those educated consumers, you can go online and you can find out which doctors are good or who has good reputations or clinical outcomes for hospitals. And in terms of being a consumer, we really think of three things when we buy something. It's cost, it's quality, and service. Well, the way that economics of healthcare are now changing, quality metrics are going to be so public that you'll be able to find out who's got good quality. Every institution will have to be effective from a pricing standpoint just to compete. So you have one remaining differentiator, and that's service. But I don't think anybody's going into their hospital and saying, hey, can you tell me about the employee satisfaction scores here, or asking those kinds of questions? And those are questions we really need to be asking.
Boy, it's a big concept, and interesting to me as well to think that just based on that morale, the patient outcome is impacted, and just thinking about what that means for all of us, that's key. I mean, it's crazy, and you point out in the book, and I quote directly from what you wrote there, saying, measuring your employee satisfaction and engagement level is the leading indicator of how healthy your organization is. So, I mean, this isn't made up. The statistics back it up and support it. So what are the challenges then to getting there? Why are so many of our healthcare organizations, and it was because we are speaking about them today, seem to have so much toxicity or trouble when it comes to treating employees well?
Well, you know, in some ways you'd have to say it's not their fault. And if you think about the way hospitals were built and the way that they're run,
yes.
First of all, it used to be that, you know, if we build it, they will come. And if your doctor said, hey, I'm going to admit you to this hospital, you would just go. And there was this blind faith. And what happened was is that we trained doctors, highly intellectual folks, in a silo, and they end up believing they're kind of king of the world and that they know it all. And then you train nurses the same way. And then you train executives or administrators in these hospitals. But they were actually never trained on how to play well in the sandbox and how to build great teams.
Mm.
So they have wonderful clinical expertise, but what about collaboration? What about making people feel good about what they do? So they were really never taught and trained, and therefore you've ended up with, like, unfortunately, many other businesses outside of healthcare, this command and control environment that I'm just going to simply tell you what to do versus why you're doing it. And that's kind of sad, because people that are in the healthcare industry have generally come with a heart for service and yet don't get to use that heart as much as they'd like to.
Well, and that's an interesting observation, because, like you said, we're training people in a certain way. Yale University just announced that in order to apply for their MBAs, they're going to be looking for emotional intelligence, not just skills from the IQ perspective. This kind of leads me to this concept you wrote in the book as well around the story of washing hands, which we've known for a long, long time is a really powerful one. But then you went further. Why is this still an issue in hospitals today? And more importantly, how are rules and orders making them better or not when it comes to washing hands on a regular basis? In fact, after every patient contact, they're supposed to be washing their hands, right?
Yeah, it's really incredible. And this is a story that came from my co-author, Britt Barrett, who talked about the history of hand washing and how in the early days, back in the 1800s, women that were giving birth in their home had a much lower death rate than women giving birth in the hospital. And she thought, well, why is that possible? And it turned out the reason was hand washing, and that doctors just felt that they were so special that they didn't need to wash their hands. And at that time, believe it or not, 35% of women died at childbirth, and that was the number one reason, hand washing. So we have this incredible history that has shown that obviously having your hands washed and being disinfected prevents the spread of disease. And it's just kind of common sense. We all go to the bathroom. We all wash our hands or are supposed to wash our hands. And yet we could all walk into a bathroom and see people in a public place that don't do it. Well, it's no different in healthcare. And so what happened in hospitals is that they created all sorts of programs to incent people to wash their hands and give them bonuses or points or give them a gift card. Just wash your hands. And what they realized is that simply giving people an order, which we call kind of transactional leadership, is not what results in movement or people changing behavior. What changes behavior is what we call transformational leadership, is telling people the purpose, telling them the why they're doing what they're doing. This is why it's important to wash your hands, because of the spread of disease, because of the fact that we could have a higher mortality rate. All these reasons that seem obvious, but if you don't articulate them in that way and make your team feel that they are doing something for a higher purpose, the chances of them doing that task simply go down. And we still struggle with that today.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because we've just talked about how important it is to, I mean, these doctors and how long they studied, how extremely smart they are, and yet we're trying to speak to them of the why washing their hands is so important, to explain, you know, the risks of infection. Like you said, seems like common sense, but I think what you captured there was because we got to link them back to that regular purpose, reminding them that that regular purpose is so important regardless of the work we do today.
That's right. The fact is, in any job, we want to feel tied to a purpose that's bigger than the job.
Yeah.
And we have to be consistently reminded what that purpose is and have a set of core values that we live by that not only are a plaque on the wall, but that are guideposts to the decision-making we have every day. And when people feel that, that guides their behaviors and makes them much more consistent, and that leads to greater productivity.
Well, and this reminds me, too, of Daniel Pink's work, right? He said, it's not carrots and sticks. They don't work. You're treating them like kids. You're almost patronizing them. What we're talking about is autonomy, mastery, and the opportunity to be able to do a meaningful job, right? It's connecting back to allowing them to have the power and the purpose.
That's right. And unfortunately, we're still in the minority in terms of the way business is done, but you start to see some of these writings or what Yale has done around their entrance requirements that give us a glimmer of hope that we're heading in the right direction. I recently, for example, judged a business plan competition called Values and Ventures, where college students from across the country or even other parts of the world were competing around business ideas, but it had to have a values-based purpose, and it had to show that not only were they making the world a better place, but they were enhancing the lives of the people that worked them. They had a social purpose, etc. And what I find refreshing is that the millennials or the younger generations coming into the workforce today, regardless of whether they're even going to own or run their own businesses, are searching for more than just money. They're looking for meaning as well.
Boy, I can't agree more, and we've talked about that extensively on this show. Partly, we just feel like, a lot of these millennials or this younger generation are saying, gosh, there won't be a pension, there won't be the type of lifetime insurance plan for me in retirement. Life is short, I'm going to try to enjoy it now. And it doesn't mean I'm going to work hard, I'm going to work hard, but I want meaning and purpose to go along with that, because frankly, I don't see it meaningful without it.
That's right. Yeah, it's not like it used to be where our folks would stay at the same place for 40, 50 years and just retire and work at that same job. People have, I don't know, nine jobs or something like that in their careers.
Yeah.
We have a lot of young entrepreneurs coming out, and I love the fact that they're looking for something more, because ultimately that's not going to just grow our economy. It's going to make people individually feel better about themselves, because they can follow and guide their own passions over a long period of time.
I love it. Paul, I'm so grateful you're with us today. We have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with our guest today, Paul Spiegelman. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned, because we'll be right back.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my friend and colleague Max Brown, and our guest today, Paul Spiegelman, author of the recent book, Patients Come Second. Paul, do you think we've got ourselves into a healthcare fix by, you talked about the silos when you were talking with Max. Are we also rewarding and in the kind of the whole financial pay, compensation, benefit structure, are we kind of rewarding the very thing we don't want?
I think that's true, Roy. People are just so used to having this incentive-based compensation that says we're going to just pay you a bonus for doing your job. And so everyone wants to make money. People really just want to feel valued. And we've got to find a way, particularly in healthcare organizations, where people are trying to serve customers who don't want to be their customer. We have to make them feel good about themselves and the work that they do. I mean, we're doing life and death surgeries, and people are entrusting their lives and their families to us. We need to be at our absolute best. And you're only at your absolute best if you can self-reflect on days when you feel good about yourself. And so as leaders, we have much more that we can do, particularly in these healthcare organizations, to not let the dollars drive our behavior, but to let the behavior drive the dollars. And I think that's where we're going to start to see change, especially with the economics of healthcare reform and Obamacare and other things that are coming down the pike.
Now, you said that some people were a little upset that with the title of your book, Patients Come Second, but you even go so far to say financials come third. How do you help leaders get this refocusing around both the position and of employees and the engagement and that whole service profit chain thing? But how do you get them around this idea that financials come third when they seem to be so focused, especially those in senior leadership, on the money?
Well, you make a really good point, and you just coined a term, the service profit chain, that was from the early 90s. Harvard Business Review came out with that article, and it turns out, you know, patients come second or customers coming second. It's not something that we invented. What we're saying is that as a leader, you have choices to make about the order of importance, and we feel like that driving a culture of engagement is the right thing to do. But not only is the right thing to do, it's good for business. And so what we're trying to do is to show this connection between employee engagement, better productivity, and customer loyalty, and profit. And there's increasing evidence that shows that. And if you look at some of the other industries and some of the books that have been written, like Firms of Endearment, and you talk about companies that all of us have heard of, like Southwest Airlines and Whole Foods and Container Store and Harley Davidson, that have far outpaced their peers in terms of financial performance. So what's the one common denominator? Is that they have a multi-stakeholder approach to business. They put their employees first. And you certainly can feel it when you walk on a plane at Southwest Airlines. Why do you feel like you have great service? Because the people there are happy doing what they're doing. So it's no different in the healthcare industry. We've got to change the way the incentives are aligned. And unfortunately, the economics are even driving the current change, because many hospital leaders are starting to look at things more seriously, like patient satisfaction, like employee engagement, because it's hitting them in their pocketbook. And there's new regulatory measures put in place, a common patient satisfaction survey, for example, called the HCAP survey, that every hospital participates in now. And there's literally millions of dollars at risk every year for every hospital if they don't hit those patient satisfaction metrics. So I'd love to think that they're doing it because they want to be more service focused, but they're actually trying to protect their revenues at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's it going to take to break down the silos and truly give health care?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that it's going to take time. And I think that the fact that the economics of healthcare are forcing us to be a customer-focused industry is the first step. So it's raising people's awareness. And honestly, leaders are scrambling with what to do just to protect their reimbursements for the government and make sure
right.
that they can survive in the new economy. Over time, it's going to change. It's going to take a change in leadership and the way we look at leadership in healthcare. And I hate to say this, but we might need to have a little turnover, because some of those that are wired in the command and control way of business are simply not going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And and there's those of us that might have been born this way, who feel this way about business and life, realize there's a connection between values, culture, and profit, that become early adopters. And those early adopters are going to help pave the way for other leaders in organizations. And we hope we can convert some of those, and I think we can. And then some of it is just going to be that newer generation that starts to replace the older generation of leaders.
Gotcha. Now, in your book, Patients Come Second, you say that if your workforce isn't connecting to something bigger, if you're not offering up something more than just a job, you won't hold on to your best people. Now, you just kind of alluded that there are some leaders who aren't going to change, and there's going to be some who say, hey, it's not my job to make work meaningful. They need to do that for themselves. Are you seeing ways in which we can help leaders get the big picture?
Yeah. Well, I think that the point you make about everyone else participating is really true. In other words, this isn't just about the leader. Employees at every level of the organization have to take responsibility and accountability for a spirit of engagement. Everyone has to participate. But I would argue that if the senior leadership doesn't get it, doesn't buy in, doesn't walk the talk, it's going to be far more difficult. And I've seen lots of people who at the middle management level get frustrated because they have a heart for this kind of thing and aren't able to succeed because they don't have that buy-in from the top. So I'd always say that it starts from the top. And look, every organization, 50% of our culture is really a reflection of the personality of our leader. And I think that's where it starts. But where the rubber meets the road is in execution. And once you have that leader who sponsors and gets it and and empowers people to build a culture like this. Now we have to move to the next level of leaders, those managers and supervisors that are working day to day, that have to understand it, buy into it, actually take the time to do this kind of work. And sometimes they're going to be cynics about that and say, well, things seem to be working okay right now. I'm getting paid. I'm getting my bonus. Why do I need to do something different? And it's that group that we really need to convert.
Now, you also quote Tony Armata, CEO of Advocate Lutheran General Hospital, in your book, when he said, if you want to treat people like just employees, they'll be just employees. If you want to treat them the best, to reward and recognize them, they'll be engaged. Now, you and I know that for years, recognition has been seen as being important, and yet the irony is it's going to be sometimes healthcare and education where they have the lowest spend on things like recognition and rewards. So why is this so underutilized in today's healthcare arena?
Well, I think that, again, it's the way that they were trained, and they weren't thinking about these things or thought that they were necessary in order to build a good organization. And now they're realizing that's something different, and the people that are working to save lives, people every day, need to feel good about themselves just like anyone else. And we spend a lot of time talking about mission, vision, and values of our organization. But do we take the time to understand the mission, vision, values of our people? Do we know what their purpose in life is, what their core values are, or where they want to be in 5 or 10 years? And simply asking those questions and helping people get a path toward their future is really a very impactful exercise. And we do that throughout our organization to make sure we understand where they want to be and we help them get there. And so I have the same question as, why are these practices not more accepted in healthcare or even in business when there's such a clear ROI and it is the right thing to do? And again, I think that's really a focus of the leadership and realizing the importance of what they might have traditionally looked at as the soft stuff. Instead of what I believe is that things like purpose and recognition are the hard things that will ultimately lead to a better and more sustainable business.
Right. Do you have some examples from your research and meeting with different CEOs from the organizations of where recognition is going well, whether that be practices, events, and just the things that people are doing? What have you seen to be the most meaningful and effective?
Sure. We found in talking to CEOs across the country, and we interviewed about 25 different CEOs to get a sense of what was meaningful for them. And we came up with a number of best practices. First was really this whole idea of core values and making sure that they were institutionalized such that they impacted the daily decision-making of that organization. And once we saw that they were embedded, that became the foundation of any great culture. And then we went to things like fun, simple fun in the workplace. How do you have fun? How do you have dress-up days or potlucks or all the small things you could do? You know what? Even in a hospital, in a serious place like that, we can have fun. And what we find is a lot of it has to do with the intersection of my work life and my personal life, because today that's so blurred. We're so connected all the time. So we want to, people like to involve families in that fun and bring what we do at work home. So organizations will do newsletters and send them to the homes of their employees, things like that. Another one that we found particularly compelling was the idea of caring, simply recognizing the personal events in our employees' lives, the birth, the death, someone ran a marathon, graduated from college. How do we institutionalize that? It's a tough thing to say about culture, but it is exactly the case. And if you're a hospital, you might have 3,000-4,000 employees. Right. How do you know when there's an event like that? How do you make sure that you find out when that event happens, that you send out that personal note card, that you make a phone call? When you show you care about someone's entire life, they will fall on a sword for you in hard times in the business. Reward and recognition. Again, it's not about the money. It's about feeling valued. And it's not so much that we can come up with the ideas. It's a matter of putting people in a room and asking them, how do you want to feel valued? Do you guys want to go out to lunch as a team? Do you like gift cards? Do you want to start up a bowling league? You know, whatever you want, we'll do within reason. But sometimes we think as leaders we know what the answers are instead of just asking and letting the ideas come from our people.
Well, you certainly kind of hit on that whole importance of knowing that the people matter and finding out what it is that they desire and need. And I think you've kind of hit that well on the head there. So, Paul, you've certainly tackled a wonderful subject around patient care, along with obviously knowing you have to drive the employee engagement. Was there something that surprised you in the research as you went interviewing these CEOs?
Well, I think that if anything surprised me, it's how far we have to go. And as much as we interviewed all these CEOs and got some great quotes, I got to say I could look in the eyes of some of these CEOs and realize that they were telling me what they knew I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And it was probably a small percentage of those that I could say, you know what, this man or this woman, they get it. They really get it, and I can see how this is going to penetrate their organization, or that they're going to become thought leaders to represent this kind of philosophy elsewhere in the industry. We really have a long way to go in healthcare. I do feel very positive, though, about the future, because, like I said, healthcare represents, what, 20% of the whole GDP. It's going to be a much bigger issue for all consumers over the next couple of years. And we have the opportunity to transform this industry into one where people are not complaining every time they leave a healthcare experience. The fact is, when we go to a hospital, generally speaking, we come out with a good clinical result. But what do we complain about? We complain about how long we waited, how we were treated, the bedside manner, they didn't answer the button. It's all those things, and that's what we have to change. And in this new world we live in, consumers have choice in everything that they do, and healthcare is no different. And we have to realize that we can't be so arrogant to believe that just by us getting a certain degree or building a facility, they're going to come and they're going to be happy. We have to compete just like in any other industry.
Absolutely. Well, thoughtful discussion here, Paul. We're going to have to take a quick break here. But for our wonderful listeners, we invite you to come right on back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue our discussion with our guest, Paul Spiegelman, and learn more about patients come second. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Sonneson along with Max Brown. Don't go away.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and, of course, myself, Max Brown. And our guest today is Paul Spiegelman. Paul, I love the candor. I love that we're talking about this and keeping it real, because we've known a lot of this stuff is important for a long, long time. I mean, happy customers. Harvard did a model of this in the 1980s. They said if you have happy employees, you get happy customers. And those happy customers equal happy profits. So in the 1980s, they said this. In the 1950s, Edwards Deming said, get fear out of the workplace. In the 1950s, I mean, this stuff is not rocket science, but yet we struggle with it today as we speak. I was in a healthcare facility not long ago where they admitted that the nurses on the OBGYN floor, and this was the sixth floor of this building, they went out separate exits, and they had two different hallways for that particular floor. And they had separate floors, and the nurses in one hallway would not talk to the people in the other hallway, and they went out separate exits when they went out after work because they did not want to talk to each other. They did not want to see each other.
Wow. How would you like to be the mom that's delivering a baby in that ward?
Right.
Right? I mean, it's terrible. When we think about a situation like that, nobody wants to be the customer. And you know, Max, you raise a great question. Is that, and our book has not unveiled anything brand new. And this is something that's been around forever. And so it begs the question, why? Why aren't more leaders changing the way that they do business? And I think some of it is what I mentioned before in healthcare. It's kind of the ego of those that have been educated in a certain manner and weren't taught these things. Some of us are wired a certain way, which is really a heart for people, and some of us are not. Doesn't mean that we both can't be great leaders, but those
sure.
that maybe aren't wired this way, we're not taught, and then they grow up in maybe a more big company world. And look, if you think what makes the news, you've got public companies where financials and quarterly calls and reviews, those, that's what's driving business, or certainly driving the media. And it's really those companies that have this different view of business that are truly growing the economy, certainly out of the recession, and making a difference. And unfortunately, we don't necessarily make the news because we're not necessarily hiring people that are going to be corrupt or crooks or end up in jail or something. We're kind of just doing the right thing. And I think that we've got to get much more data to validate this connection. I'm actually involved with the Small Giants community in a research study, a three-year program with Benedictine University in Chicago, to validate this connection where we're studying companies, thousands of companies over a three-year period, and doing deep dive into dozens of companies to really look at this connection, because we think it really is about the data. And if we can get more data, just like you guys look for data to validate the ROI of employee recognition, with this data, we think we'll convert more leaders over time.
Boy, it's such an interesting topic, and I'm so glad you're taking it so, like I said, keeping it real. And one of the things from the book that I really appreciated was, you know, you suggested that a company that's encouraging people to go out and do community projects and things like this, very meaningful, but you quote, and then to quote, you said, it's sort of foolish to ask your employees and colleagues to go out and give to the community if they are suffering themselves. Sometimes helping the community begins with helping one another first.
That's right.
What does this mean for you in the way you lead today?
Well, you know, I think that came out of my own experience, because I ran my company, Barrel Health, for 28 years, and we felt very passionate about helping our community as one way to build loyalty. And we, to this day, that's a big part of what we do, and I think important for every organization. At the same time, we're the kind of company that if you strip away all the marketing jargon, we're a call center business. We have single moms making $29,000 to $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Who are looking to us to be not just their business life, but their social life. And they're suffering, not suffering necessarily, but they're living paycheck to paycheck. And so when we started to do some work for the community, we got a little bit of pushback and said, hey, what about us? And we realized with all the things that we did, we needed to have a strong focus on our internal community as well, which meant simply that we needed to make sure that they had resources in the community to get the things that they might otherwise not have or they might need. And as soon as we recognized that, then we also realized that those same single moms who were living paycheck to paycheck were very very passionate about helping others who had even less than they did. And that was because we showed that we cared about them.
Boy, such a huge point, and I love that you're saying it like that. I love it. Let's take another thing here, because how far does one go before they finally say, this person just isn't worth holding on to? How do you deal with conflict, ego, and difference of opinion? Now, I know that's a separate question, because there are sometimes when, hey, someone can have a difference of opinion and it should be welcomed. But what I'm talking about here today is that doctor who might be a huge revenue stream, might be a heart surgeon or have some specialty that's bringing in huge revenue for the hospital, but is a tyrant. I mean, they're really hard to work with. What do you do?
Well, that is the most important chapter in the book, and we actually call that chapter The Losers, Whiners, and Jerks. And the fact is, talking about candor, we have those in every organization. Now, I don't think there's any company that can't point to the negative influencers in their organization. Yet, as leaders, it's one of the areas where we score so low in taking action. And I've heard every excuse in the book, particularly in healthcare, because everybody's so strapped for employees that they'll say, well, this person does a great job and they really contribute, like the doctor you talked about. Or, hey, if I get rid of this person, I'm probably not going to get the replacement FTE I need, so I've got to keep them there. It's a warm body. Or it's HR's, it's an HR problem because it takes me 3 years to get rid of somebody. Or we're union and I can't do it that way. And we say that that's a bunch of hogwash, right? And the fact is, we all suffer when there's people that don't belong in our organization, and we have an obligation to our organization and to that individual to make the tough decision and to move them on, because you know what? That doesn't mean that they're not a good person. They're just not a right fit, and maybe they can go somewhere else, pursue their passion, and thrive. And they have a family to support, so let them go do that. But instead of making all these excuses, we have to learn to have that courage. And Britt Barrett tells the story of a doctor who was the number one revenue producer in his organization, millions of dollars every year. And he was that tyrant that you talked about. And he brought everyone else down, and they finally let him go. And you know what? Everybody felt relieved. And what happens as a leader when you make that tough decision, everybody's looking at you and saying, what took you so long? And so we have to make these decisions. And who could ever name a time when someone was let go from your organization or self-selected out that was a negative influencer and the organization suffered as a result? It never happens. So we have to make those moves, and we have to make them now.
Yeah, and in fact, to your point on that, the organization typically continues to suffer despite the revenue that they might be bringing in. The underbelly of that is that we typically don't record how much they're losing on the other side of it, do we, when you leave someone like that in place?
Oh, yeah. There's just no way to calculate it. And yet, part of the human nature is to complain, and for a few minutes it's fun to hear the guy complain or rant about something going on. But people want to be treated well. People want to be treated with respect. The first thing I do when my family meets someone new or goes into a retail establishment or has an experience, I say, were they nice? You know, it comes from the number one value my dad taught me when I grew up. He said, always be nice, never burn a bridge. And that has stayed with me my whole life, and I think has contributed to me having some level of success, being able to build relationships with people. So the tyrant, whether it's a physician or a leader or an office worker, they've got other things going on in their lives that may be none of our business, but it doesn't belong in the workplace.
You know, you lead me to another story that I reminded me of my own experience. And I was out speaking with a client, actually presenting at this conference, and I dropped off my car at the hotel, and I was leaving with valet, and I just said thanks to the guy. And he stopped, and he said, boy, that's the nicest thing someone said all day. And it just surprised the socks off me, because, I mean, I didn't say anything but thank you.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, oh, my something? Goodness.
Yeah, and interestingly, I was recently getting physical therapy for my back, and the physical therapist that's working with me was very interested in my book. So I got a copy of the book for her, and I got a copy of the book for the owner of the physical therapy business. And within a week, she had read half the book, and the owner hadn't read it at all. And then when she finished the book, she ended up quitting the business because she felt so passionate about the fact that this is the right way to do it. And she wasn't personally experiencing it in this clinic and realized that, like you said, life's too short. She's going to go to a place where they treat people well. And I just gave her great props for doing something like that because she realized that she can do her work somewhere else, feel good about herself, and make a difference in people's lives. And sometimes it takes a message or a book or a relationship or someone to give you that call to action.
Boy, it sure does. In fact, I'm coaching a leader right now who came to me and said, listen, I know I'm losing employees because I don't know how to treat them right. And we're just going through that process because he's starting to realize how much money he's been losing for years and years and years based on this very concept.
Yeah, you do lose good people, and many of us don't take the time to realize or look under the covers to realize that's really why we're losing people. We're not giving them the attention that they're asking for. And when you do, why would anyone leave? You're showing that you care about them, and you're working on the good people that are staying. You know, we've spent a few minutes here talking about those that don't belong. What we need to be doing is spending time helping provide training and development for those that are doing great work to make them even better.
Well, and this is a huge point. So how do we do that more effectively, particularly for a leader? As you've mentioned even in the book, you know, that you don't go up and ask everyone how their weekend was or anything like that, but there are different ways to be able to show that appreciation, to show that you care. What is the way that you do that?
Well, I think that starts with being vulnerable and letting your people know, particularly, let's say, this person you've been coaching. When someone's looking out for direction, let's say it's fair to assume that they're not doing the job that they'd like to do today. So the first thing that employees are going to wonder is this real? Is this genuine? Or is this going to be the flavor of the month and this is going to go away? So what I would do is I would sit down with my key employees and I would say to them, look, I realize that there's choices in the way we do business. I want to build a unique, different culture here. I want to do things differently and I want to do this together. I want to learn from you. So I'm not going to tell you how this is going to work. We're going to do this together and I'm going to make this an inclusive exercise. Everything from developing that set of core values to determining what reward and recognition programs we're going to have, to determining how we're going to measure employee satisfaction over time. And so I think it's about inclusiveness and autonomy and make people feel that they're part of the solution.
Well, and that's a big distinction too, isn't it? Because, I mean, Vineet Nayar, he's an author, CEO of HCL Technology in India. He wrote Employees First, Customers Second, so a similar concept. But for me, and the thing I asked him was, but how are you practicing it? Because it's one thing to say it, a whole other thing to do it, isn't it? And so what you're saying is you really do have to practice this, and you have to be able to deliver it in a different way than you've thought in the past.
I believe that developing an employee-based culture is not something you can delegate. You have to walk the walk. You have to get involved yourself. And what we did in the book, and really it's in terms of developing our chapters and how people can measure this, is we coined what we call the culture IQ, the 10 things that we believe leaders need to focus on in order to build that employee-focused culture. And if you just go down that list and you even take that online test, it will give you the gaps, and you'll know that, okay, maybe I haven't focused a lot on community service, or maybe I haven't focused a lot on recognition, or maybe I'm not doing a great job at measuring employee satisfaction and benchmarking over time. So it gives you a baseline score to be able to say, here's my gap or gaps, and here's the roadmap I'm going to take to get there. And I think something that's really important for leaders to know, that if you're trying to build this kind of culture, it will not happen overnight, and it may take years, but there's no journey that's more rewarding than this.
Gosh, well, we're going to leave it at that point on this segment. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with our guest today, Paul Spiegelman. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown, Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Thanks for coming back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with the author of Patients Come Second, Paul Spiegelman. Paul, this has been a delightful show today, and certainly grateful for your input on this very needed topic today, economically, I think. And, you know, you mentioned that physical therapy clinic owner not reading the book. There's going to be some other leaders who may be a little better. They're still a little on the fence, though, maybe a little skeptical about focusing on employees first. Just not sure that this really works. What's the kind of message, besides just obviously the book content and everything you've researched, what's a one-point message you would give to those people?
The one point I think they have to do is to understand the impact that they can have on people's lives and how it will make them personally feel. Because in our lives, we're all looking not just for money, but we're looking for significance. And particularly in the healthcare world, you have leaders, like I said, who have come with this heart for service and have been trained and educated in a certain way. But I'll tell you that the thing that makes a leader feel best, certainly makes me feel the best, is when I get a letter or a note card or an email from an employee or a former employee that tells me that I impacted their life. Or we helped someone that we cared for in a way where I get a note from their spouse and says, you know, I've never been able to wake up every day and see my husband smiling because he loves what he does. So there are so many stories I could tell you of where we impacted people's lives, and what that does is makes me feel good as a person, makes me feel like I'm contributing, and ultimately is far bigger than any paycheck I could get. And so what I encourage leaders that are cynics or just don't get it or don't want to take this jump is just please wait till you see how it feels. And when you see how it feels to you personally, then I think it's going to change your perspective on the way you're doing business today.
Do you think that leaders in healthcare especially have kind of lost that passion in many ways?
I think they have. Healthcare is just like any other business, and people don't realize that, but you've got for-profit healthcare. You have public companies that are dealing with quarterly earnings, and they lay people off, and they do the things they can to hit their number, and you've got nonprofit organizations in healthcare that are working at 1 to 2% margins every year. And over the next 5 years, the penalties from the government could put up to 7% of their revenues at risk. So now you're not talking about thriving, you're talking about surviving. And
yeah.
So I think it's going to make those leaders think twice about the way that they're leading and the kinds of concepts that we're talking about today, while seemingly would be foreign to them as a way to deliver better financial results, they're going to realize that, you know what, we have to do things differently. I'm going to learn from some of the other best practices that I'm hearing from my peers. And healthcare, for example, is a very much of a copycat industry. So as we get more of these case studies from leaders who get it and are delivering good results, I think we'll see the others follow along.
Mm-hmm. And so are you seeing that as you work with some of these healthcare institutions and the CEOs, are you starting to see some examples within these case studies that you're collecting of some turnarounds as well?
Yes, we're definitely seeing turnarounds. And again, it's a reflection of leaders. At Henry Ford, one of the Henry Ford medical centers was taken over by a former key executive from Ritz-Carlton, and Dr. Gerard Van Grinsven, who happened to bring with him all the things that he learned at Ritz-Carlton. And he has turned around that facility in a tremendous, tremendous way. David Feinberg, who became the CEO at UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, whose hospital suffered from very low patient satisfaction scores and even lower employee engagement, turned that around where their patient satisfaction is now at the 97th percentile and incredibly doing very well financially. My co-author, Britt Barrett, at Presbyterian Dallas, he came to that organization with a rate of 50% for employee engagement and has now moved that to the 92nd percentile. And I can tell you by having visited with his leadership team that there's a sense of passion around the patient that you wouldn't see anywhere else. And so that, if I were to be a patient, I would want to have surgery at that hospital because I think people are going to treat me better.
Yeah. Oh, that's exciting, Paul. That's good. Listen, I know our listeners are going to want to know more about your book and the great work that you're doing. How would you best recommend that they reach out to you?
Well, they can go to our website, which is patientscomesecond.com, and they can learn all about the book. They can hear some stories from others. And what I encourage people to do, whether you're a healthcare organization or not, is to take the Cultural IQ test. It's right there on the site. It's free. Takes about 2 minutes. And you can answer 10 questions on a scale of 1 to 10 about how your organization rates. And not only will we send you an immediate score, but we'll actually send you a free link that you can distribute within your organization so you can understand the cultural IQ of your organization. You can baseline your results. You can set an action plan to improve. And we're not here to sell anything. We don't train. I don't consult. I'm just trying to deliver a message to people that changing the way you lead is really what's going to change the healthcare industry going forward.
Well, this has been exciting and very refreshing for us to hear today, Paul, and we're very grateful that you would join us on the show today.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Grateful you're here, Paul. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, for our wonderful listeners, we continue to ask you to send in your suggestions for us for other great guests that we can have on the show and interview for you. And tune into our next show where Max and I will certainly be continuing this great discussion on building relationships, inspiring greatness, and, of course, creating workplaces where people can thrive. Max and I invite you to also come to the Rideau.com site. That's rideau.com/radio. And there you'll get some more wonderful information. You'll get some great links to all of our past shows. And why don't you visit us and tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll be pleased to send you a small token of appreciation. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. Until next time, I'm Roy Sonnison along with Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonnison and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.